You all here. It's good to have our home folks here. I know there's a lot missing, spring break, flu bugs, and whatever else is keeping them away. And it's also good to have some visitors here with us. So we welcome you. David was going to be gone today, so I was going to be here by myself, and then he let me know yesterday afternoon he will be here. So good to have. Appreciate what he shared here this morning and the thoughts there. And we think of the Jesus in that boat. Why did the disciples wait so long to go to him? I was thinking about that here this last week. Was it because they knew he was really tired and they were just being friends and they didn't want to disturb him? But finally, out of desperation, they couldn't believe this boat was rocking like this, and so they went and woke him up. I don't know what. It's a beautiful story, and I think it can give us so much courage today that he still, if we ask him, he is there with us, and he will do the same thing for us. He doesn't always calm the storms around us, but he will calm the storm within us. We have that promise. So last Sunday, I pulled out of 1 Samuel chapter 17. This Sunday, I'm going to look at chapter 18. In a little different note, last Sunday we talked about being prepared for battle, and this Sunday I'd like to talk about the true friendship and thinking about friends. You know, and I feel so, as I was thinking about this subject and studying, something hit me. I feel so blessed. I have so many friends, so many people that I can call and talk to, and a lot of you are here, and there's others. That it's just a blessing. What would life be like without friends? And what do you think of when you think of a friend? As the chances are about 10 and 1 that when a man slaps you on the back, he wants you to cough up something. So that's one kind of friend. There's a story said about, and I think I might have given this one here before, so forgive me if I did, but it's such a beautiful story about a friend. This 5-year-old Mary underwent a serious operation. She lost considerable blood and needed a transfusion. After checking the rest of Mary's family, the test showed that the blood of her brother matched hers. "Will you give your sister some of your blood, Jimmy?" asked the doctor. Jimmy set his teeth and said, "Yes, sir, if she needs it." At once they prepared for the transfusion. In taking the blood, the doctor noticed Jimmy getting pale, yet there was no apparent reason. "Are you feeling ill, Jimmy?" asked the doctor. "No, sir," said Jimmy. "I'm just wondering when I will die." "Die?" gasped the doctor. "Do you think people die when they give blood to someone else?" "Yes, sir," replied Jimmy. "Are you going to give your life for Mary?" "Yes, sir," replied the boy simply. It's a beautiful story of a friend, a little brother, that was willing to give his life for his sister. "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." A faithful friend is the medicine of life. Proverbs 27:6, "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful." You know, when we think of friends, it was this coming month, I think it was April 23rd, that my father-in-law passed away. And I can't think about friends without thinking about him. He was my father-in-law, but he was also my friend. You know, we spent a lot of time those last couple of years gathering eggs together. And he cared about me. I knew it. And maybe it was because I was his son-in-law, I don't know, but he had many friends. He had a genuine concern for their souls. You know, when he knew somebody was troubled, he'd worry about them. He couldn't sleep. He'd wake up praying for them. You know, his friends weren't social media friends. They weren't fictitious friends. He talked to them. Sometimes he would text, but that didn't always go so well. But most times he would talk to them. And pick up the phone. And you know, I was blessed just the other our men's meeting Wednesday evening, and some of you young fellows are here, and you were sharing about how you looked at social media, how you looked at friends, and different ones mentioned the part of it being not real, and the part of the importance of connecting with people directly. Marcus read really appreciated what he shared this morning about what do we need. You know, ultimately, Christ is all we need. But what would life be like? God created us to be social. We're social beings. We need friends. And he read some out of Exodus there. He started, I think, at verse 12 in chapter 11. If you go to the verse before that, it said, this verse caught my attention. It said, "And the Lord spake unto Moses face to face, as a man speaketh unto a friend." Well, think about that. The Lord spake unto Moses face to face, as a man speaketh unto a friend. So, does that tell us something? I think there's something in this verse for us today, especially. Face to face, as a man speaketh to his friend. We have lots of scripture where we find Jesus looking at people with compassion, that eye contact. I believe it was Jonathan that mentioned here recently that it says he turned and he looked on her, and he brought out the point that he met his, there was eye contact. He met the lady with the sickness, that there was it brought joy to her. He looked at her with compassion. It brought hope. It brought joy, encouragement. And scripture says that Jesus was tempted in all points like as we are. You know, he knows our weaknesses. He knows our struggles or pain. And I think as he reached out to those around him as he walked this earth, you know, his presence radiated joy and peace. We attended a funeral yesterday in Salem, Arkansas. Those of you familiar with Arkansas, I guess there's two Salems, because depending where we punched in, it took a lot longer to get to Salem, but this is the Salem right across the border, about 2 hours from here. He was the owner of the feed mill where we get our chicken feed. And it was very different to be at a funeral with several hundred people, and I only knew, my wife went with me, but so that was three, I guess, that I knew that were there, but only knew two people there that I knew at all. I knew, and that was the widow and another fellow that was connected with the chicken business, but there was probably I don't know how many people were there, but it was full. I'm guessing there was 300 plus people there. So it was very interesting to go to a place like that and only know two people. You know, this man was close to my age, and I'm not here to judge, but one thing was obvious. He had many friends, and his life touched many. His friends were not social media friends. He used a flip phone. You couldn't even text this man. If you wanted to get a hold of him, you called him. If he didn't answer, he would almost always call you back within 10 minutes. Or if it wasn't then, it was sometime. He called you back, unless your call didn't go through. And he was a busy man. He wore a lot of hats. It wasn't something that he was just sitting there waiting to do. He was always going. He was too busy, really. He wore too many hats. But he was genuinely interested. You know, he was only my feed man, but if there was an issue with my chickens, a sickness or something I was dealing with, I don't know how many times he offered. He said, "Well, hey, I'll run up there and look at him." 2 hours. Can you imagine? That was him. He was very quick to do that. And he did come up one time. I didn't like to make him do that. But he was, there's the different people that shared. He was a coach for his boys during their school days, in their sports teams. He was spent a lot of time coaching. And some of the recipients of his coaching talked about him, and he was one that pushed them hard. His goal was to push them mentally and physically, to prepare them for life, to make men out of these boys. And you know, I was impressed with that crowd that was there. It was obvious they considered Keith a friend. You know, the right kind of friend. There's a quote by a philosopher, Astyages, I can't pronounce his name, but he said, "One cannot always choose his vocation or his surroundings in the world, but one can choose his friends." But he said, I used to wonder that men would examine carefully an earthen vessel which they were about to buy worth just a few cents to see if there were any cracks or flaws in it. Yet the same men would exercise no thought or care in the choice of friends. John Wesley said he made the resolution that he would have only those friends that would help him on the road to heaven. You know, the desire for friendship starts at a very young age. It's interesting to see these little toddlers talking about their friends. You know, they got this close friend and that close friend, and they're all excited about their friends. Young and old alike crave friendship. I'm going to read from 1 Samuel chapter 18 now, looking at this unique friendship in the Old Testament. If you want to turn with me there, I'll read a few verses out of chapter 18, then jump on over to chapter 20. First Samuel 18, verse 1. "And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him on that day and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David, and his garments even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle." Notice there that the part, he loved him as his own soul. If we jump over to 20, we're jumping across some of the parts here where Saul was trying to get rid of David and David's wife, Michal, actually was deceptive there and helped David get away from Saul. Then we go start into verse chapter 20. It says, "And David fled from Naoth in Ramah and came and said before Jonathan, 'What have I done? What is mine iniquity? What is my sin before thy father that he seeketh my life?' And he said unto him, 'God forbid, thou shalt not die. Behold, my father will do nothing either great or small, but that he will show it me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so.' And David sware moreover and said, 'Thy father certainly knoweth that I have found grace in thine eyes.' And he saith, 'Let not Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly, as the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, there is but a step between me and death.' Then said Jonathan unto David, 'Whatsoever thy soul desireth, I will even do it for thee.' And David said unto Jonathan, 'Behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I should not fail to sit with the king at meat. But let me go, that I may hide myself in the field until the third day at even. If thy father miss me, then say, David earnestly asked leave of me, that he might run to Bethlehem, his city, for there is a yearly sacrifice there for all the family. If he thus say, it is well, thy servant shall have peace. But if he be very wroth, then be sure that evil is determined by him. Therefore thou shalt deal kindly with thy servant, for thou hast brought thy servant into a covenant of the Lord with thee. Notwithstanding, if there be in me iniquity, slay me thyself, for why shouldest thou bring me to thy father?' And Jonathan said, 'Far be it from thee, for I knew certainly that evil were determined by my father to come upon thee. Then would I not I tell thee?' Then said David to Jonathan, 'Who shall tell me? Or what if thy father answer thee roughly?' And Jonathan said unto David, 'Come, and let us go into the field.' And they went out, both of them, into the field. And Jonathan said unto David, 'O Lord God of Israel, when I have surrounded my father about tomorrow any time, or the third day, behold, if there be good toward David, and I then send not unto thee and show it thee, the Lord do so and much more to Jonathan. But if it please my father to do thee evil, then I will show it thee and send thee away, that thou mayest go in peace, and the Lord be with thee as he has been with my father. And thou shalt not only, while I yet live, show me the kindness of the Lord, that I die not, but also thou shalt not cut off thy kindness from my house forever. No, not when the Lord hath cut off the enemies of David, every one from the face of the earth.' So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, 'Let the Lord even require it at the hand of David's enemies.' And Jonathan caused David to swear again, because he loved him, for he loved him as his own soul. Then Jonathan said to David, 'Tomorrow is the new moon, and thou shalt be missed. because thy seat will be empty. And when thou hast stayed 3 days, then shalt thou go down quickly and come to the place where thou didst hide thyself when the business was in hand. And thou shalt remain by the stone easel, and I will shoot 3 arrows on the side thereof, as though I shot at a mark. And behold, I will send a lad, saying, Go find out the arrows. If I expressly say unto the lad, Behold, the arrows are on this side of thee, take them. Then come thou, for there is peace to thee, and no hurt, as the Lord liveth. But if I say thus unto the young man, Behold, the arrows are beyond thee, go thy way, for the Lord has sent thee away. And as touching the matter which thou and I have spoken of, behold, the Lord be between thee and me forever. And we know how the story goes there. They went, and Saul was very wroth with David. You know, Jonathan was the king's son. He didn't, what could a shepherd boy do for him, for a prince? What advantage was it to Jonathan to have this country boy for a friend? Jonathan had everything going for him. You know, he was rich. He was the king's son. So he was high in rank. He was older than David. So we might call this a disinterested friendship. Or a friendship not built on ulterior motives. You know, if the friendship would have been built from the other side, David pushing to be Jonathan's friend, it could have been, there could have been ulterior motives involved. Not doesn't necessarily mean there had to be, but there could have been. But this way it was entirely unselfish. A disinterested friendship. Jonathan loved David, I believe, because he saw the character that David had, and he saw in this lad was true bravery. You know, the world seeks friendship that will work for their own advantage. You know, there's friends that simply want to be friends for what it does for them, for what it gets for them, for what being someone else's friend will do for their image, for their own good, their own pleasures. And that's a selfish friendship. They want yours, not you. You know, when they realize there's nothing in it for themselves, they will quickly drop these friendships and go for the next. You know, that's probably what bothers me a little bit sometimes when I see, I'll go back to myself in my early years. We moved here, school. You know, I had friends that are still my friends today that still, count them friends. But, you know, things can change with time. You move, people, those kind of things change. But when somebody quickly drops their friends, their childhood friends, their friends that they live with, that they're with, for those that they meet in a short term, you know, I think that's, we need to be careful about that. Because who's going to be there for you in the long term? Who's been there for you? You know, if we want to be that kind of friendship, we'll have to be that kind of friend and seek to be a friend, have friendships that are disinterested and unselfish. There's a English publication that offered a prize for the best definition of a friend, and among the thousands of answers received were the following. One who multiplies joys and divides grief. The next one was one who understands our silence. The next one is a volume of sympathy bound in cloth. Another one is a watch which beats true for all time and never runs down. But here's the definition that won the prize. A friend, the one who comes in when the whole world has gone out. You know, it seems like Jonathan was that kind of friend. And it seems kind of strange that Jonathan's friendship grew so strong at the time of David's victory, a time when David was becoming a hero and to his countrymen. People were giving him higher praises than the king. And Jonathan would have naturally been the next heir, the next one in line for the throne. So typically, most people in Jonathan's place would have considered him a foe or a threat to their own chance of promotion. You know, when they were singing, David has slain his thousands, and Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. You know, it's the very thing that turned Saul into such a bitter enemy, but Jonathan's friendship stood the test and stood the test of time. He was willing to see his friend exalted or promoted, even though that it meant what was rightly his would slip out of his reach, out of that normal succession. It did not affect the friendship of this loyal heart. I believe somehow Jonathan knew that David wasn't seeking to take this away from him. He wasn't seeking the crown, but it was God's will that it would be that this way, and he was submitting to that. You know, Jonathan was tested. David's enemies tried to destroy his regard for David. Even Saul, you know, Saul almost took the javelin, or he dodged the javelin that was meant to be for David. His father, Saul, tried to convince Jonathan that David was trying to take the throne away from him. And Jonathan tried to reassure his father that that was not the case. David was innocent. He went so far as putting his own life in danger to convince his father. You know, Jonathan showed his friendship in many practical ways. You know, some friendships can go a long ways in words, but when it comes to real help, it ends. You know, flattery is probably something that is a negative in friendships. It's just being genuine, not just, you know, you see somebody pouring over somebody, but they're gone, and then that's the end. But true, genuine friendship. Words are important, but the real test comes when we have the opportunity to help. He defended him in his absence. He secured his escape from Saul's plot. He helped him in his lonely exile by faithfulness, by encouragement, by personal kindness. You know, true friendships are based on the desire to give, not to get, to help, not to be helped. Most times it's in little ways that the richest help is given. There may be times it will cost to be a friend in monetary ways. So the most important aspects of friendship is human kindness, cheer, fellowship as we travel life's highway. That's the blessing of true friendships. Another important aspect of this friendship was their love for God. That was mutual. They had something in common. Both of these young men loved God. You know, true friendship binds hearts and lives together in virtue, in purity, in honesty, in godliness. You know, we need to be a friend to all, but to open our heart to someone that is not a true friend is opening up our heart for hurt. And when we think of true friendship that binds hearts and lives together, you know, that's it can also have the opposite effect when it can pull you apart or can pull you down. Pure, rich friendship is like the warm spring sunshine. You know, how many of you are enjoying this these last couple of days we've had? Today's not quite so nice, but that beautiful sunshine, those little spring flowers popping up in places. I know I've heard from some that it's already too warm, but I don't think so. We'll get used to it, and I love it. True friendship brings out the best in each other, knowing we have friends that care about us, that are depending on us. I mean, think of the wrong kind of friend. In our Sunday school this morning, we were talking about honey, and it talks in there about, can too much honey be harmful? And had somebody that found a verse in the Old Testament that talks about bread and honey. Or butter and honey, I believe it was, or that James brought out. Well, this Heraclea in ancient Greece was noted for its honey. Beyond all other honey, it was sweet to the taste and exhilarating to him who ate it. But this was because it was poisoned by the juice of aconite. And aconite, if you look that up, is a very poisonous flower. So I don't know. Hopefully we don't have that around here. I don't worry about what kind of honey I eat, but it said it's deadly if you eat this honey with this aconite in it. So there are friends who entertain and thrill and excite, but like Heraclea's honey, have deadly poison in them. So that's an extreme case. Friends that pull us in the wrong direction, encourage us to do things that are a detriment to our spiritual well-being. You know, is that really a friend? Friends that aren't a challenge to us in our spiritual life, that leave us feeling empty after a visit, no depth there. You know, we can't trust their advice. Rehoboam took his friends, his peers' advice. If you look at that situation, Rehoboam had people in there. He had people that gave him good, solid advice. But he took his friends' he took his peers, and number one problem there, I think, is they didn't have that common ground for their love for God. I believe they were in it for what they could get out of it themselves. It was all about politics. It was about the opportunity for position and monetary gain. And so they encouraged him to make bad decisions, and he took their advice. The nation fell apart, at least in part, for taking the wrong advice. George Washington said, "Associate yourself with men of good quality if you esteem your own reputation, for it's better to be alone than in bad company." And another quote was, "It takes 20 years to build a good reputation and 5 minutes to ruin it." You know, if we think of that, we need to be more careful what we do. And I believe that we can apply that to the type of friends we have. And I believe we'd all agree we need to be friendly to everybody. You know, when we think about the heart of Jesus, he was there with compassion. He was reaching out to those around him. He was compassionate to all. But, you know, when he chose his disciples, those that he wanted to take the ministry on, talks about he spent all night in prayer. When he chose those that he would spend time with during his ministry on this earth, he communed with his Father. I believe another vital part of friendship is to pray for each other. Look at the Apostle Paul's prayer for his friends in Philippians 1:9. It says, "And this I pray, that your love may abound yet more and more in knowledge and in all judgment, that you may approve things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense till the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness which are by Jesus Christ unto the glory and praise of God." You know, notice there, he doesn't pray that they'll be blessed financially, but he asks for things that will enrich their spiritual lives, their character, that their love may abound more and more. You know, no one can be a Christian or friend if they don't abound in love. I believe we can say that scripturally. No one can be a Christian or friend if they don't abound in love. John 15:13 says, "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Ye are my friends if you do whatsoever I command you. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth. But I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known unto you. Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and ordained you that ye should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever ye shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. These things I command you, that ye love one another." So greater love hath no man than this. You know, think of that, go back to that story of little Jimmy. You know, he was willing to give his life for his friend, for his sister. And Jesus says there that greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. "And you're my friends if you do whatsoever I command you." And that's a call to obedience to Christ. And isn't it a beautiful thing to be called a friend of Christ? "If ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and ordained you that you should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain. And whatsoever you shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. These things I command you, that you love one another." Got the Ten Commandments here of being friendly. Number one is to speak to people. There's nothing as nice as a cheerful word of greeting. You know, I mentioned this in our Sunday school class this morning, but have you been around people that wherever they go, wherever they enter, wherever they meet people, they're speaking words of encouragement, of cheer, positive things? That's such a blessing, and I mentioned this in Sunday school class, and I'll say it again here. When Dale Heisey was here and spent the week here, and he stayed at our place, so we went, he rode around with me a couple days. We visited some neighbors in the area and took him out to eat a time or two. And it just blessed me. I don't care where we walked into, where we were. If at a restaurant, it was the waitress or the person that served us, he would bless them and thank them for their service and just say he's praying that they have a blessed day. And it did something. I can't believe that we walked away from that place and those people were the same. It had to touch them. And that was a challenge to me. And it was a challenge to me this yesterday at this funeral when I saw the group of people that were there and that were, I don't know that I've ever been at a service where in the whole crowd all around us through the service, you could just feel it, the emotion that was going on. And it was, what does my presence, when I go somewhere, when I speak, does it put people down or does it pick them up? And that's a challenge. Speak to people. There's nothing as nice as a cheerful word of greeting. 2, smile at people. It takes 72 muscles to frown and 14 to smile. So if you want to work out, smile. You're doing a lot more of a workout than you are if you're frowning. Call people by name, and that's a challenge to me because I recognize faces, but names don't stay there so easy. But it's important. Call people by name. The sweetest music is the sound of his own name. Be friendly and helpful. 5th one, be cordial. Speak and act as if everything you do is a genuine pleasure. And notice genuine, not flattery. Do it genuinely. Be genuinely interested in people. You can like everybody if you try. 7, be generous with praise. Cautious with criticism. And I think we need to be honest with our friends. You're not a real friend if you don't, if my collar's sticking out here, fix it. Or tell me that needs to be fixed. That's a real friend. Sometimes, we're just scared to do it, but there's a lot of other ways we can do that. Reach out. Be a friend. Do to others what you would wish they would do to you. Be considerate of the feelings of others. It will be appreciated. 9, be thoughtful of the opinions of others. There are 3 sides to a controversy, yours, the other fellow's, and the right one. So 10, be alert to give service. What counts most in life is what we do for others. And isn't that so true? What counts most? What is really important? I appreciate the thoughts on what do I need this morning? What we need is Christ. But I think when we have that, then it's also going to reciprocate. It's going to pour out to those around us. I'm going to close with a poem here. Only God gives a friend. I think that God will never, and this is by Rosalie Carter, I think that God will never send a gift so precious as a friend who always understands and fills each need as it demands, whose loyalty will stand the test when skies are bright or overcast, who sees the faults that merit blame, but keeps on loving just the same, who does far more than creeds could do to make us good, to make us true. Earth's gifts a sweet contentment lend, but only God can give a friend. Let's bow our heads for prayer.